Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and I have Sean in studio. Now, this is a show about what matters most in our life, our mind, thoughts, feelings, actions, relationships, and our fulfillment in this beautiful journey of life. Now, in this show, I'll bring you the latest research about facial expressions don't tell the whole story of emotions. Researchers warned of drawing too quick conclusion about people's feelings just on their face. Then I will speak to Dr. Deborah Sandella, an award-winning psychotherapist, a university professor, and the originator of the groundbreaking RIM method. We'll definitely talk to her about it. And she is the author of Goodbye, Hurt and Pain, Seven Simple Steps for Health, Love, and Success. Be sure to subscribe to my podcast and YouTube channel and social media. I'm on Twitter, Dr. Zain, or Instagram, Dr. Fujian Zain. Go on the podcast, give me reviews. You let me know, what you think, and let me know what are the topics that you want me to talk about, whether myself or with an expert. We'll be right back with the tip of the week.
Hello, this is Dr. Fujian Zain. For all of you who are interested in changing something in your life, or shifting a new career, or bettering your intimate relationship, or, you know, it's just time to take care of you, but you really don't have time to take off from your busy day, or you're just too far away from my Beverly Hills or San Clemente office, I have a great offer for you. I'm only offering this time-limited package to you for online therapy if you are living in the state of California, or online coaching wherever you live around the world. Now listen, a 10-week package with a $500 discount. Call me to schedule your appointment, 818-648-2140, 818-648-2140, or go to Fujian.com, Foojan.com for more information. It's time to take care of you because you are worth it.
So last Friday was Valentine's. So I think that the whole last week and this past weekend and probably and hopefully kind of like moving along this week, there's all this conversation about love and romance, right? So the experience of love brings a warmth and joy and smile for every one of us, an experience that every human being yearns for. Some have experienced it all their life and some have not, but I've always dreamed of experiencing it. For some who are in the grief of losing a person whom they love, the pain and the loss associates and felt whenever it is realized that experience of love was taken away from them. Yet, the yearning is always there, even if it only associates with the past and with the hopelessness of ever having it in the future. Love also rides with a sense of attachment, which makes it personal and sacred. The attachment and the expectation that it holds may also bring a special joy with a sense of belonging or bring about anxiety and pain of loss. So notice how you source your love. How do you share your love? When do you withhold your love? Who do you give love freely to? Do you give love to your mate as a gift or as a leverage? Think of yourself. What are your thoughts about love? How do you feel when you love? How do you behave when you experience love? And what are the impacts of your thoughts, emotions, and behaviors regarding the experience of love in your life and others? So love is your essence and your source. It can fill you up with within and shower everyone around you, igniting and then sharing your love. Is truly free. So give it away and give it away to yourself first and then to anyone that comes around you. Trust me, it's beautiful. You will feel warmth inside of you. Even if everybody else doesn't fulfill your expectation or they don't show up as they are, just give it away as free as possible. And at least you'll enjoy it regardless of whether it comes back. And we'll be right back with the latest research. Thank you.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fujian Zane. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want. You deserve it.
Check us out online at KMET1490AM.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to Inner Voice. So, interacting with other people is almost always a game of reading cues and volleying back. We think a smile conveys happiness, so we offer a smile in return. We think a frown shows sadness, and maybe we attempt to cheer up that person. Some businesses are even working on technology to determine customer satisfaction through facial expression. But facial expressions might not be reliable indicators of emotion, research indicates. In fact, it might be more accurate to say we should never trust a person's face, as the new research suggests. Damn, and I thought I was getting good at that, to read people's face, see what researchers say. They say at the researchers at the electrical and computer engineering at the Ohio State University, whose work has focused on building computer algorithm that analyze facial expressions, and his colleagues presented their findings February 16, 2020 at the annual meeting of American Association for the Advancement of Science in Seattle, asked the question, can we truly detect emotion from facial articulation? And the basic conclusion is, no, you can't. The researchers analyzed the kinetics of muscle movement in the human face and compared those muscle movements with a person's emotions. They found that attempts to detect or define emotions based on a person's facial expression were almost always wrong. Everyone makes different facial expressions based on context and cultural background. And it's important to realize that not everyone who's smiling is happy, and not everyone who's happy smiles. I would even go to the extreme of saying most people who do not smile are not necessarily unhappy. And if you are happy for a whole day, you don't go walking down the street with a smile on your face. You're just happy. It's also true that sometimes people smile out of an obligation to a social norm. This would not inherently be a problem, the researchers say. People are certainly entitled to put on a smile for the rest of the world, but some companies have begun developing technology to recognize facial muscle movement and assign emotion or intent to those movements. Some claim they can detect whether someone is guilty of a crime or not, or whether a student is paying attention in class, or whether a customer is satisfied after a purchase. What the research showed is that those claims are complete baloney. That's what it said on the research, complete baloney. There's no way you can determine those things. And worse, it can be dangerous. The danger lies in the possibility of missing the real emotion or intent in another person and then making decisions about that person's futures or abilities. For example, consider a classroom environment and the teacher who assumes that a student is not paying attention because of the expression on the student's face. The teacher might expect the student to smile and nod along if the student is paying attention, but maybe that student, for a reason the teacher doesn't understand, cultural reasons perhaps, or contextual ones, is listening intently but not smiling at all. It would be wrong for the teacher to dismiss that student because of the student's facial expressions. After analyzing data about facial expressions and emotion, the research team, which included scientists from Northeastern University, the California Institute of Technology, and the University of Wisconsin, concluded that it takes more than an expression to correctly detect emotion. Facial color, for example, can help provide clues. What the research showed is that when you experience emotion, your brain releases peptides, mostly hormones, that change the blood flow and blood composition. And because the face is inundated with these peptides, it changes color. The human body offers other hints too, he said. Body posture, for example, in context plays a crucial role as well. In one experiment, the researchers showed study participants a picture cropped to display just the man's face. The man's mouth is open in an apparent scream, and his face is bright red. When people looked at it, they would think, wow, this guy is super annoyed or really mad at something, and that he's angry and shouting. But when participants saw the whole image, they saw that it was a soccer player who was celebrating a goal. In context, it's clear that the man is very happy, but isolate his face and he appears almost dangerous. Cultural biases plays a role too. In the US, we tend to smile a lot. We're just being friendly. But in other cultures, that means different thing. In some cultures, if you walked around in a supermarket smiling at everyone, you might get smacked. So two takeaway from this research are, you're never going to get 100% accuracy. And the second is that deciphering a person's intent goes way beyond their facial expression. There you go. So if you thought you knew it all by just looking at people's face, think twice. I think you got to talk to them to really find out what's going on with them. So I am excited to have Dr. Deborah Sandella, who's an author of the first number one international bestseller, Goodbye Hurt and Pain, Seven Simple Steps to Health, Love, and Success, with us. She's an award-winning psychotherapist, university professor, and the originator of the groundbreaking RIM method, which we'll be talking about it today, which is a heavily backed neuroscience tool proven to reduce stress and improve quality of your life. She's been featured in the media, including USA Today, CBS, and CNN. She frequently shares the stage with Jack Canfield and is co-author of their Awakening Power meditation program. Her numerous professional awards include Outstanding Clinical Specialist, Research Excellence, and Evie Best Personal Growth Book Award. And you can find her and her books at goodbyehurtandpain.com. Goodbyehurtandpain.com. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Deborah Sandell.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET1490AM.com.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the Awareness Integration Path to Create the Life You Want by Dr. Fujian Zain. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the Awareness Integration Path to Create the Life You Want. You deserve it. Hello, this is Dr. Fujian Zain. For all of you who are interested in changing something in your life, or shifting a new career, or bettering your intimate relationship, or, you know, it's just time to take care of you, but you really don't have time to take off from your busy day, or you're just too far away from my Beverly Hills or San Clemente office, I have a great offer for you. I'm only offering this time-limited package to you for online therapy if you are living in the state of California, or online coaching wherever you live around the world. Now listen, a 10-week package with a $500 discount. Call me to schedule your appointment, 818-648-2140, 818-648-2140, or go to Fujan.com, Foojan.com, for more information. It's time to take care of you, because you are worth it.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and so excited to have Dr. Deborah Sandella with us. She is the author of Goodbye, Hurt and Pain. Thank you so much for spending the time with me, Deborah. How are you?
I'm good, Fujian. I'm really happy to be here with you.
Oh, I'm very happy. I met you for the first time, I think it was November 2019 in New York, in Peace Village with the Brahma Kumaris and Sister Jenna. And I'm so grateful always, I guess, just get to meet amazing people at these retreats. So I know that we had shared a little bit about our models together and your goals and everything that you were doing. And it was exciting to have you come to the show and share your brilliance, your method to our listeners and the viewers. So thank you for taking the time to be here.
Ah, it's really my pleasure. Yes, it was so much fun to connect with you. So I knew I really wanted to be here.
Beautiful. So tell us about your method. First of all, tell us what RIM means.
Mm-hmm. Right. So RIM is an acronym for Regenerating Images and Memory.
Right. And how did you create this model?
Well, it's been over about the last, a little over 20 years that it all began. And I don't know if you want me to share the dramatic story of the very beginning, or I don't know.
Whatever you want us to know.
Well, I would say that it was through a personal experience with my dad having a cardiac arrest, that it became very clear to me that more than thinking is important, and that having an experience where I connected with him when I found out he was in ICU really changed my life professionally and personally. So it caused me to start looking in different directions. I happened to have been an academic at the time. And I started to really look into, I call it imagination. You could look at it many different ways, but it's the visionary part of us that we don't always give attention to.
Yes, you also talked about a lot about intuition, the feelings that show up within you and how to listen to them, how to be connected more to your feelings and, like you said, the visions and the intuitive part of us as it gives us messages. And what is it? I mean, obviously within us, there's the thought, there's the emotion, there's the visualization, and the thoughts and emotions also show up many times as a visualization within us. Why is it that you think that feelings are more important than thinking?
Well, we know from the neuroscience now, we didn't always know this, and so psychotherapy came out of a different framework. But now we know that emotion originates in the body, and it is nonverbal. So it's a nonverbal experience until we become aware of it, and then the mind can come in and give it words and meaning. So that we hadn't been, when we're just talking about our feelings or about an experience, we're not actually tapping the emotion itself as an energy in the body. And when we don't, then that can get stuck in the body and cause a lot of emotional and physical pain and symptoms over time. So that the ability to be able to access that intuitive physical place where emotion is stuck is actually quite new and revolutionary and very effective.
And it seems like what I'm hearing from you is when we talk about our emotion, we're not really experiencing the emotion. We're kind of like divided. We're separated from the emotion and describing the emotion versus when we are in our body experiencing the body, it's a very different experience where that's the real thing. With the experience of it versus just talking about it. But in order to, after experiencing, as I was reading your book, there are exercises there that you do bring it into words. You do bring it into a thought form and images. Can you share that, please?
Right. Well, in order for it to be released, then as it comes into consciousness, it has to come into some kind of form. Mm-hmm. And so the left thinking mind needs words to be able to really understand and have meaning and be valued, in a whole brain way. So that as we access the feeling, both through imagination, but also physical sensation, physical awareness. So sometimes what we'll start with is a physical pain. That will be what's most present for somebody. So whatever it is that is really showing up as being more in our awareness is like an entry place. It's like a portal to the emotional, I call it the emotional operating system. Because what I've discovered after all that education, that actually our emotional system is a lot more resourced than I had thought. And so rather than directing it, taking control of it, in this method, we actually follow it. That it really knows where to take us in the body, and then it kind of uncovers the content that then the mind can give words and meaning, and then we get to work with that. And now we're really in, we're in a really rich, fertile place for very quick and immediate transformation and release of pain.
Mm-hmm. And you also in your book talk about the distinct differences of emotions, such as you say that an infant shows up with a sense of curiosity and comfort and discomfort. And many of the emotions that people deal with, such as fear, anger, sadness, grief, jealousy, envy, they're all part of the discomfort end. And most of the people, when they are feeling joy and happiness and all of that, they kind of like take it for granted that it's natural and it should be there. I think everyone kind of gets really consumed by the uncomfortable ones because they want to get rid of the comfortable ones really quickly. Right. So they kind of like more wrestle with this part of it versus, the comfortable ones. What are the ways that you suggest with your methodology of RIM and in your book, Goodbye Hurt and Pain, in how to deal with that hurt and pain, how to deal with fear, anger, grief, envy, jealousy, and all of it?
Well, I think that, what you've said is really excellent, because what's happening is we don't like it. We don't like those feelings. So we, in our culture, have actually created a lot of ways to distance from it, as you talked about, separate from it. And when we do that, what happens, it becomes unavailable to be released. So it's kind of, I think of it as we have this constant river of emotions that's flowing through us. It's a natural part of our emotional operating system. And that when we try to not feel anything, whether it's positive or negative, it's like creating a dam in the river. And then once you have a dam, then that water of emotion that you're really wanting to get rid of, you're actually keeping on this side of this dam and it can't flow out. So that the most important thing is to value all feelings equally. And that's not an easy thing. It really, we think, oh no, I don't want to have pain. I just want to have good feelings. But it's like the same faucet. And if we are only turning on the warm water and we won't allow the cold water, we're only turning on the hot. You can't turn off one without turning off both. So what happens when we try to turn off one feeling, it ends up turning off all feelings. At various levels. And so the biggest thing is to actually, instead of fearing those feelings, inviting and welcoming them, because the more quickly we welcome them and allow ourselves an experience in the present moment, they automatically start to dissipate and expire and flow on down the river, evaporate. And so it can feel very counterintuitive to do that, but it is really important. The other thing is that that's where there's really important information. So when we have feelings, particularly the uncomfortable ones, it usually means we need to be looking and investigating, well, what is not feeling right? What is this about? Maybe there are some ways that we're creating problems for ourselves, or we're leaving ourselves unsafe. And so it's really important information. And when we want to avoid it, we don't get that information. And then we can get hurt. Or ignore wisdom.
Deborah, one of the experiences that I've had also with some clients, and I just wanted to share with you to shed some light on it, is that most people, personally, myself and most people, I've noticed that, yes, when you focus on an emotion and you're in their body and you are with it, that you allow this flow to show up, and then there's a movement, there's an energetic movement where the feeling kind of moves along. Maybe it goes into a different feeling and it has another messages, or finally kind of like it dissipates. I agree with you. But there's also some people who, when they are in a particular emotion, they fan themselves. And many of the fanning happens with to fan themselves into exaggeration of that emotion. And I think they bring in some sort of a thought process into it that fans it more, versus this natural flow of it just being, seeing what it gives you as far as information, and then, you know, allowing to be with it. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think that is true. And one of the key things in the REM technique is that it is closed eye. So the minute we close our eyes and we really are not focused on the external world, but we're really turned inward, then we start to move into more whole brain experience right away. So there's just subtle ways with the REM process that people keep out of thinking, but it's kind of like dreaming, where it's a simulated dream state, so that the mind doesn't have control to embellish on the story. I mean, it can, but it's like it's just not motivated to do that, because there's this whole inner kind of movie that begins and unfolds, and we get to follow it. It's so compelling. It's like reading a novel, except it's us. And it's our experience. And it takes us, though, right to the root experience that is usually a very big surprise and something that may not be consciously remembered until it does. But would it be helpful if I give a little example?
Please, yes.
So, like, there was a woman that was in her early 30s who came in because she was very successful professionally, but she wanted a relationship and she wanted to get married and have children, and that just wasn't happening. In fact, she had never really dated very much, didn't feel very attractive. And so in this process, as we started following her inner experiences, we landed all of a sudden where her imagination brought up an image of her standing in the cafeteria line in fifth grade. And she goes, I have no idea why I am here. I said, well, let's just see what happens. And as she's standing, now, this is an imagination. So it's an inner movie, you could call it. All of a sudden, one of the boys in her class walks up to her and says, you're ugly. Well, those of us that remember fifth grade, we know that girls are very sensitive about their looks and boys are pretty awkward with girls. And so in that experience, though, when he said that, because she was so nervous and sensitive and really not confident about her attractiveness, she started to have a humiliating emotional experience, wanted to crawl under the table, was holding back the tears because she didn't want to be seen for crying. And so in that moment, we accessed that energy in her body, that feeling that had been stuck there. And just by accessing it, we now can give it her a chance to feel safe to say something. So, you know, I gave her permission to go ahead and speak to the boy, whatever she wanted to say. And she said, "Well, you really hurt my feelings. Why did you do that?" And just in that present moment speaking, it allowed her to stand up for herself and not just become a silent taking the pain without even understanding it. So what happened as she continued with the dialogue, she found out that the reason he did it, I bet you could guess why, knowing fifth grade boys.
He had a crush on her.
Yes, absolutely. That was it. He said, "Well, I did it because I like you." And that's how I interact with the guys. And in that moment, when she heard that, when she felt that truth from him, that he was actually attracted to her, all of a sudden, her whole self-esteem around her looks to men totally rescripted itself. It's like there was a whole new moment of emotional awakening that changed her body awareness. The way she looked when she walked in the office and when she left the office physically was so different. It was, she walked in very frumpy. She walked out like a beautiful woman, because really when we hold our beauty, it shows in our body. But she didn't remember that consciously, that moment. And within 6 months, she met somebody and they were married within a year. So, you know, she now has two children. So that what happens is when we go to the root cause, which the intellectual mind does not know, it may make up a story about what it thinks.
Right.
The intellectual mind does, because it's very creative in that. But we don't always know. And so when we go to that source experience, whatever it is, whether it's, you know, whether it's even true or not, because history can get distorted in our memory. And so, but however it presents, it's very important for us to work with that, because that's where right. The feelings are.
Yeah, I mean, we create the memory in a way that we actually want to create the memory and perceive it and kind of like land it and put it in a storage. But what is it that makes some memories stick in the memory even after we work with the causal effect and everything is resolved? Somehow the memory, the way that we perceived it and hooked it and locked it, kind of like stays. I mean, sometimes we work through some of the energies that are around it and release it, but somehow the memory, the way we have described it to ourselves and said it, kind of like stays in stone.
Well, there is, sometimes it takes more than one memory, because if something gets locked in early, you may have more than one experience in your life that has anchored that belief. So it's become a belief at an unconscious level. And it may take some, you know, a series of working with different memories that show up at different ages. Because that was in fifth grade. Although actually she got results with just that session. But, you know, sometimes, particularly with people that are much older, she was 30. But as you get, you know, much older, you have many more memories that have built up to, you know, find evidence that you're not attractive, or find evidence that whatever it is that unconscious belief is that's limiting.
Mm-hmm. What are the ways to actually let go of the overwhelming feelings that show up? Many people, when they get flooded by a lot of emotions, they just seem to either shut down, mm-hmm. or have an outburst, and then they'll, you know, go through the shift of the, and obviously cognitive behavioral, many times those theories talk about shifting your thought process in order to change the emotion. But many times as the emotions are getting, we're getting flooded by them, it's almost like a river that's just taking us, and we have no way of doing anything except just, you know, feeling like we're getting drowned in all of it.
Right. Yeah, it's like a flood, you mm-hmm. know. The river of emotion can definitely be like a flood. And so the way we talk about it in RIM is that we create floodgates so that you can safely start to allow the emotion to be released, but there's no risk of flooding. I think that the big thing is the difference is with REM, instead of working with thought, we're actually working with the raw emotion. So that, but we're creating safety with how to work with that raw emotion. So when you're flooded, is actually a very excellent time to access the core stuck emotion and allow it to be unfolded, allow it to be worked with. So that I would say there's a couple of things. It's like pause and breathe first. Because the breath connects both the voluntary and involuntary nervous systems. And so when you control, when we actually start to control our breathing, we're having a direct access to that part of the brain that creates anxiety and fear. It's not an intellectual process. It's a very much a visceral or gut experience, and it just happens. It just shows up. So we can't stop that. We can't prevent that from happening if it's there. When it shows up, it just happens. But what we can do is tap into that part of the body and the brain by even just starting to control our breath. And as we start to control our breath, actually give over to the feeling without hurting ourselves or others. So that, for instance, like with anger, what I find with anger is so many people have learned not that it's not cool to be angry. You know, it's not a good thing. You're not a nice person if you get angry. We learn that so much in so many ways.
Especially for women.
Yes, especially for women. And so what happens is when we start to sense anger and, you know, just to interrupt the chatter, just to let go, shift the attention over to closing your eyes and just feeling as angry as you can. It's like, it doesn't mean you even have to necessarily do anything. Some people will end up, doing a physical release or writing, but actually just giving permission to be angry automatically drains it. It's kind of like when you try not to do something, then you really, you know, it's almost like you do it. It just automatically happens. Like, don't see the elephant, but what do you see is the elephant. So that when we just take a moment, it doesn't have to actually be very long. The emotional operating system has just, it just shocks me sometimes how resourced and how easily it can work when we start to go with it rather than to resist it and push it away. So that even just saying, you know, I'm going to allow myself to be as sad in this moment, I'm just feeling as sad as I can, or I'm just feeling as angry as I can, I'm just letting that happen. It's amazing because all of a sudden the pressure's gone. So I don't know if you've had that experience, but
Yeah.
So it's always really surprising that it's just not the same.
Yes, I've personally had a lot of experience with this, and I've had a lot of clients as you that when you allow yourself to not be afraid of your feelings and not be thinking that you're going to get suffocated or flooded by it, and you, like you said, embrace it, you kind of walk into it and allow it to be. And I even learned this from Albert Ellis, where, he would just say, like, you know, from 0 to 10, how angry are you? And the person would say 3 and says, you know, move it up to 7, move it up to 10. And he would just, you know, put the scale of emotion in your hand in a sense of as thinking, okay, you know, move it anywhere you like. You could bring it down, you could take it up and notch and do whatever. And how much that person can really embrace the emotion and allow it to talk and, you know, let it go. But there's also, beside the emotion, though, there's obviously your value, the thought process and the belief system and all of that. But what I hear from you is you engage in the emotions immediately. You go into this, whatever the issue is, you engage in it because that's where you say the messages lie. That's where the actually, if you go through that pathway, you will know what the source of your anguish is, much more than trying to figure it out.
Exactly. Yeah, that that trying to talk ourselves out of our feelings just doesn't work. We've all tried that and it doesn't work. So that I would say that how immediate is an organically arrived at speed. So that we're, you know, as a facilitator, so I don't think of it as a therapy. I think it as a facilitation of that system and that person as their whole system, their mind, body, and spirit. So they're really in charge. They can't do it wrong. We're really following them, their inner journey. And then we have certain skills, like we, you know, we have tools and skills that we can pull in to make sure that it's profitable, to make sure that it's safe, and that it facilitates moving toward a resolution. But it's very organic so that it is not controlled. So some people will go fast and some people will go slow to get there. And however they get there is how they get there. And that it works, because what happens when there's no resistance to their speed or where they're wanting to go or what they want to do in that inner experience, then all of the resistance and defenses just fall away. And we have a much quicker straight line to what's really happening and what needs to happen and wants to happen. And neither the client or the facilitator intellectually knows what that is. You know, it's something that happens during the time together that it shows up, but we don't know. We don't know, because it's a whole, it's kind of a different, it's a non-linear intuitive process, actually. Right. Yeah. So that we're actually starting to work with the University of Colorado around that. They have a theory of two minds theory, which is the reasoning mind.
Matches for two minds.
Oh, sorry. For two minds. I don't know how that happened. Sorry, I guess Siri, my voice on my phone. So sorry. That the two minds theory is reasoning and then the intuitive mind, and that they work very differently. And like in healthcare, we use the reasoning mind to educate people mostly, but that's not really very effective in helping people get to the root blocks to being healthy, whether that's emotional or physical. And so how to engage the deeper aspects of who we are, that second mind that we have not explored as much, or we haven't become as comfortable with, is really what this is all about.
Mm-hmm. You also in your book state that you don't need to talk about your emotions. You could. Are you saying that just feeling and expressing and all of that expression of it and you sensing it is enough, that you don't really need to talk about your emotion? Or is this the same thing that we were talking at the beginning, where if you attempt to talk about your feeling instead of experiencing it, then you're kind of like far removed from it and you're describing your emotion versus being in it? But are you also saying that even as you are in it and experiencing it, that there's no need to talk about it even afterward, or putting it together in a perspective?
Well, you're correct. That's what this is about. That the key word there is talk about. So the about is it, so that when we talk about something, the logical mind starts to make up a story, and then we get all kinds of our defenses and rationalizations engaged, and the whole thing changes. So instead of telling the story, to be in the memory. So what we know in neuroscience is the way to unlock memory so that it becomes unstable and can be changed. This is emotional memory, not factual memory, but emotional memory, is to be in it. So we need to access being in the memory first, but then we immediately begin to alter it. Soon as it's unlocked, soon as it's destabilized, then we use skills to start regenerating a new experience with that memory. But it feels real, because it's in present time experience. It's being experienced. It's not being talked about. But you do use words. So to your question, it's like the words are important. But for instance, like in the example I gave about the woman in fifth grade line, she was in a new dialogue, but she was in the dialogue. It wasn't remembering the old dialogue as it was all the way through. So you don't re-experience the old memory the same. Does that make sense?
What I'm hearing from you is if I'm experiencing something in my body and sharing it with the words, that's using the words to share what I'm experiencing, which is different than being removed and describing it through another lens. And right. So if it's, for example, there's a distinct difference between me being in Hawaii and experiencing this amazing beauty versus watching a video of Hawaii and talking about Hawaii. It's a very different experience. And kind of what I'm hearing from you is a different experience of me looking at my emotions, sharing my emotions as if I'm describing something out there versus I'm inside my body, I'm actually experiencing it and then using words to share with you outside of myself how I'm experiencing it. And you're saying that's when you are in that space and you go, first of all, it's easier to find the source. Second of all, that you immediately, your system is regenerating and rewiring what your experience has been to the here and now experience, which, you know, brings all your strengths and everything and reintegrates it in a system.
Yes. Yeah. I would say that's accurate. Yeah. So you got it.
Yeah. That's part of also what we use in the awareness integration model, because this is what the science is bringing for all of us. So we're constantly moving toward whatever, you know, the researchers are bringing, and these are the latest research. And thank you for bringing that into also a module with the RIM method that, you know, people can really go through. And you have great exercises here that people can go through each and every, practically every single chapter. And you have simple exercises for people to go through and really work and distinguish between these elements for themselves and really experience. You also have meditation that you said if they go to your website. Is it the Goodbye Hurt and Pain website?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about the meditation, please?
Yeah, so the meditation is one that really guides people to find an inner resource, you know, what we call it as a virtual resource, because this really is a virtual technique. So it can be done over the phone or Skype very easily because it is virtual. And so it is a meditation that helps people gain an awareness of a virtual or more than one virtual resource that's available that brings a feeling of safety, of power, empowerment, and also of love. And so having that, we found, is really very powerful as an ongoing inner safety. It's like you're not alone. It's like you're not alone. And that it was interesting because there was some research, I don't know if you read this in the book, about how when people have a person with them when they're experiencing pain, it actually can decrease physical pain. The registrate, you know, how physical pain registers. But the surprising part was a picture of that person with them actually relieves the pain more than the real person.
Wow.
And I thought about it when I read that research, and I thought, well, that's really true. When my husband's with me, it's wonderful to have him, but he also brings his own opinions about things.
I prefer to have him with my opinion and not his.
Well, that's it. And so you get to just, have the awareness of, yeah, this is a loving person that's available for me and right here now. And I get to imagine him in his purity. So the meditation really helps people do that. So it's very helpful as an ongoing kind of resource.
And do you also use meditation in the RIM method, RIM method?
I would say that the process itself is we guide people into a meditative state, or they drop into a meditative state. So you're within that meditative state, but it's interactive, and it's a very active inner process. So that it's not the same kind of process as meditation, or it's even not even the same as guided meditation. But it is, because it's client generated, so that, but interactive, verbally interactive, between the individual and the facilitator.
And can people go through the book and go through some of these experiences themselves, or do they only have to work with like one of your therapists, with yourself or one of the other therapists, which you have train them to your model? Or can this also, as they go through the book, they can, obviously some parts of it, not very deep, but some parts of it, they can also go through your exercises and your methodology with themselves?
Actually, the book is written just for that. It's okay, written for people to use with themselves. And I get emails, you know, saying that it helped people deal even with sexual abuse memories. I mean, it's amazing, because with the self, there's a self-regulation, and we're generally, the psyche doesn't go places that are going to get us into trouble. It's when other people would push us to go places that maybe we're not ready for or don't feel safe, that we can get into more trouble. So people can have had dramatic self-healing experiences using the book. So beautiful. I encourage that. Yeah. Now, it's not, I did not write it to teach people how to facilitate others.
Sure.
Because again, you're getting into different territory in terms of, we're accessing very, you know, these are skills that take you very deep. And so we don't want to, I want to make sure there's always safety with that.
Yes, absolutely. So for all of you who are listening and watching us, please go to either Amazon or Goodbye. hurtandpain.com and get the book by Deborah Sandala. And this book was also forwarded by Jack Canfield, who's the co-creator of The Chicken Soup for the Soul. I know probably everyone has heard of him also. So here it is, the book, Goodbye, Hurt and Pain. It was a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much. I learned from you when I was at the Peace Village, and you know, we sat together at the table and sharing our models together, and again today, and hope to have you back as you you know, create more and more experience, and your own experiences add to it and bring and share with us.
Oh, thank you so much, Fujian. I have enjoyed it very much. I enjoy you, and I look forward to seeing you again, both on your show and personally.
Same here. And for all of you out there, create an amazing life for yourself and everyone around you. And until next week, bye-bye.